The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So in this in these short little time for a talk, short talk, I want to continue a little bit on the theme of the indriyas, the five faculties, and so the emphasis here is teachings about five qualities or capacities, functionings that we have, so faculties that reside inside of us, that when they operate, kind of arise from within and animate us, bring vitality to us, engage the practice, support the practice, guide the practice. And with the idea that these are something that well up from inside, they're capacities we have that get activated and get used, as opposed to being in the control tower and kind of treating ourselves as like, almost like we're external to ourselves, almost like we're going to treat ourselves as an object, and we're going to engage these things and muster ourselves to focus on the practice and be the doer. There's a part of practice, we're not the doer of practice, but we're the allower of practice. We get out of the way, we allow something to kind of make space for something to kind of, that's functioning within us, to flow through us and bring vitality and energy or life to us. In a certain kind of way, give meaning or purpose to our life that comes from a kind of biological source almost, rather than ideas of what we should do and want to do. And for some people, this is a foreign idea, that there is some kind of sense of aliveness and purpose that can arise from within out, that doesn't necessarily need to have an activity or a purpose or a goal. It's just the nature of kind of just life coursing through us. It's not maybe so foreign to some people. There are occasional activities in life where people have this feeling. And some people will get it from exercising. And after a while, the exercising, there's this vitality and this coursing of energy in us. It just feels like it's meaningful or powerful in itself. It doesn't require a purpose or a meaning just beyond just that flow. Sometimes in lovemaking, sometimes in being in nature, sometimes in meditating. And so it's just, just to be alive is enough, and just the energies are moving and just feels very satisfying. And in these five indriyas are these kinds of forces within us that can be awakened and become powers that move through us. And it's most explicit or most clearly seen in the discussion of the fourth indriya, which is samadhi. And that some of the metaphors used for when samadhi gets activated that of an underwater spring in a lake, where that's feeding the lake. The fresh water coming into the lake is coming in from the bottom of the lake, flowing up. And the way the metaphor is stated in the suttas is that this lake, there are no rivers flowing into the lake, and there's no rain. So the only way the rain gets refreshed is from the springs from within. So in meditation, when people get concentrated, you're no longer, sitting there, you're not no longer getting animated by having chocolate or listening to nice music or getting a massage or looking at something beautiful. You're not getting stimulated by the senses. That's not what's feeding us and getting us going. Some people use the sense desire, sense things of the world, kind of like caffeine, to get themselves kind of pumped up. So, like, if we just have more sensual desire, more pleasure, more something, and we get kind of vitality, we get energy from that. But when that external source is no longer there, some people get deflated. And rain, I think this, I think in this metaphor, symbolizes the mind that rains down its all its thoughts, and thoughts are always, you know, a million little kind of little drops that come in and are doing their thing. And some people, thoughts can be wonderful. I'm very friendly relationship with my thoughts. I like my thoughts. But it's possible, some people use thinking as a caffeine, as a vitalizer, get them going. Some people use thoughts of desire. Some people thoughts of anger and hatred and resentment, and they really get them pumped up, and it's what gets them going. Some people, it's, you know, they get restless and they worry a lot, fear thoughts. It's always been amazing to me that there are people who love going to horror movies. And that just, like, I still quite don't quite understand it, but in my protected life, maybe I should go try them. But the idea that somehow they get, you know, energized by this, by fear, you know, this is the, you can do that with your own thoughts, and sometimes the way we're energized by it is not necessarily in a pleasant way, but certainly are energized. So without the thoughts, you know, influencing us, the thoughts kind of shaping us or conditioning what's going on, without the sensory world outside coming in with data that gets us kind of energized or something, there can be this spring from inside that wells up, that flows through us in a, with refreshment, with energy, with and this is kind of the metaphor that's used for when samadhi kicks in. So again, we're talking about something that flows from the inside up, from the inside out. And so part of meditation practice is to make space for something which is not us to begin flowing, to make space for something not only, it's not our doing. We're not going to make it happen. We allow it to happen. We create the conditions where something inside can start moving and flowing and all that. And some people don't want to do this because some people want to be in control. Some people are afraid of giving up control. And so being in the control tower and figuring it all out and being in control and trying to hold everything in place limits the ability to let something else move through. Something which is certainly part of us, within us, but could be considered, you know, not me, not us, in the sense that we're not in charge of it or we're not making it happen. It's kind of welling from a place that's a different place than the usual kind of control tower place that we might be operating. So to sit quietly and get out of the way of our life, get out of the way of this life. So part of the function of letting go of thoughts, letting go of staying with the breath, for example, it's not so much to use the breathing to control it and bear down on it and just be with the breathing, but the way that there's a simple way that staying with the breath helps in so many other ways of getting out of our own way. The more you can stay with your breathing, the less you're preoccupied with the things you're resentful for, things you're planning for, or things you're trying to figure out, and so the idea is to kind of get out of the way partly by letting go of things that kind of put a lid over these natural forces operating. In a sense, this whole approach has a very positive view of the inner life. Given its chance, this beautiful things will begin to flow through and operate and animate us or bring vitality. Some people are reluctant to do it because once you kind of begin opening up and allowing for some possibility like this, then unresolved issues will come first. And so you have to sit with the unresolved grief or the unresolved anger or all kinds of things that might come. But that's part of the healing process. And just like these good faculties begin operating and moving through us, so there's a purification process that goes on in this practice, and all this kind of gunk that's in there, maybe say it's nicer, unresolved issues will begin flowing out to empty out. Sometimes this practice is described in another metaphor of purifying gold. and getting the impurities out of the gold, so the gold becomes pure. And that's also, I like the image a lot because, you know, isn't it nice to think of your innards as being gold? like gold. So, so there's a way which the in ancient India before the Buddha that they used all these equivalences, made connections between the outer world and the inner world, and as I said earlier this morning, connecting the idea of the god Indra to these faculties within us as part of us making this equivalence, this connection, that's you know what's out there, we can find in ourselves, or an aspect of it we can find in ourselves. And so here's another little kind of fun little, I think, story where there's a kind of this equivalence is made, connection is made, the outside world to the inside world. The Buddha is going out for alms with his bowl, and he comes across a farmer at a time the farmer is feeding his workers. And the Buddha, you know, comes and stands there, which is a sign that this mendicant is there ready to, available to receive offerings if it's offered. And the farmer looks at the Buddha and says, you know, I plow, and then I sow my fields, and then I eat. You too, he says to the Buddha, should plow and sow, and having plowed and sowed, you should eat. You can eat. It's kind of on the surface, it's like, get to work. you look strong and capable, and you should work, and then you can eat. But, you know, just don't go around begging. And so it's a little bit of a challenge to the Buddha. And the Buddha replies, I too plow and sow, and having plowed and sowed, I eat. But I do not see, the man, farmer says to the Buddha, I do not see your yoke, plow blade, ox prod, or ox. Even so, you say, I plow and sow, and having plowed and sowed, I eat. And so then the farmer said to the Buddha, you assert, this in a poem, in a gatha, I assert you are a plowman. You assert you are a plowman, yet I do not see you plowing. Now I ask, speak of your plowing, so we may know of your plowing. And the Buddha said, in a verse, faith is the seed, restraint is the rein, and wisdom is my yoke and plow. Conscience is the plow pole, mind is the yoke strap, and mindfulness is both my plow blade and the ox prod. I use truth for weeding, gentleness sets me free. Energy bears the yoke and carries me to peace from all yokes. Energy walks onward without turning back, where having gone, one does not grieve. Plowing so, I have plowed that which has the deathless fruit, having plowed this plowing, one is set free from all suffering. And the farmer was happy with his answer, and then he fed the Buddha. So a different kind of work than he was doing the inner work. So faith is the seed. In terms of the five faculties, then, the fifth one is wisdom. Wisdom is my yoke and plow. And the mindfulness, which is the third indriya, is the plow blade and the prod, the goad that keeps you going. So there's part of the function of mindfulness is to see clearly what's there incisively, to really kind of almost like a sharp blade, sharp attention. Oh, this is what's happening. Here I am with this. Here I am with this. But not as an application of the control tower, but rather as a natural functioning of the relaxed, open mind. The mind is a cognitive faculty. And when the mind is still and quiet and relaxed, there can be a very sharp and very freeing discernment, seeing, oh, this is what's happening. This is what's happening. With this, with this. And then the second indriya is energy. And here it says, it walks onward without turning back. So this part of the function of energy is some people translate the word as persistence. Just step after step, keep going, keep going. It walks onward without turning back, where having gone, one does not grieve. So the path of this practice that the indriyas are a part of is on a path that leads someplace. And then here it's described as a place, you go to that place, and then you won't grieve. So that's kind of an interesting idea. Certainly there's no regrets when you get there. And the place that, another way of talking about it here, is the place where one is set free from all suffering. So, what does it take? What do you know about maybe sitting quietly or being quiet, tuning in to yourself, allowing what's there, and allowing something good to flow, allowing something to... Can you tap into something? Can you tap in? Can you get out of the way and allow life to move through you? And may that take the shape of the five indriyas. Can there be faith or confidence? The flow of confidence. Can there be the energy of vitality of practice that flows through you rather than something you have to mentally, like manual labor, apply? Mindfulness or awareness that clearly sees what's here. The wonderful collectedness of samadhi, where we're no longer preoccupied or concerned, focused on the things of the world, but we allow the inner life to flow harmoniously together. And then wisdom that understands what's wise, what's healthy, what's beneficial. So I'll talk more about this at the last talk of the day, last part. But for now, it's supper time. And there's a few people, wonderful people, Jessica and sitting there, and also Hillary is in the kitchen now, who have made an offering for those of you who have been plowing today. And now that you've plowed and sowed, now you can eat. And so in a few minutes, the supper will be out, and it'll be offered. So when it's all properly set up, just stand out there and be ready, and maybe some more setup needs to be done. And then somehow they'll indicate that supper is ready. And then if some of you could help with the cleanup afterwards, that would be great. There is a... it's 6 o'clock. There's what's called temple cleaning. And you're the manager, so... So there's too many of you to do all the cleaning. But at 6 o'clock, if some of you can talk to Kirsten about... would you not just cleaning up a little bit from the meal, but it's time to empty the trash cans or clean the bathrooms and do the kind of very basic kind of standard cleaning we do, so that you know, a little bit taking care of the day, the, you know, what's happened, all these people being here for the day. And then the next sitting will be at 6:20, and a walk, a sitting. And then at 8:15, I'll give another talk. Great, thank you.